Hey there, we're back with another Tabletop Throwdown. I'm Mike Dunn. We've got Dan Hinken tonight again, and Stephen Starkey has joined us for this episode, which means, yes, we're probably going to be talking about D&D somewhat, because that's why I usually bring Stephen in on these. Because, yes, he is our D&D historian here at Gaming Trend. but yeah, so actually, let me. The topic tonight is GaryCon. GaryCon is a convention that I guess was its 16th year this year, and it was started by Luke Gygax to honor his late father Gary, to basically just get together and do the things that Gary loved the most, which is sit around a table and play some games. So I actually, this was my first year that I went. It was super, super cool. And I was actually so good that I don't think I will ever miss a GaryCon again if I can at all help it. And I'm probably going to drag Steven with me next year. But yeah, it was great. It's a convention that's held in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which is the birthplace of Dungeons and Dragons. And it's really interesting place. I've never been. It's like a little kind of a summer resort town, just north of Chicago. I knew D&D was created in Lake Geneva because I remember seeing that in all of the Dragon magazines when I was growing up, but like actually connecting it to a physical place was pretty cool. But yeah, like I introduced you guys. Why don't you guys say hi?
What's up, Tabletop Throwdown? Yeah. So I'm really just interested to hear more about, you know, just the whole experience. I mean, you know, D&D goes back for a while, and I'm looking forward to seeing what your experience was. If you got any updates about upcoming things, or if it was just all old school, or what kind of things. So I'm looking forward to digging into that.
Awesome. Steven, how are you doing? I know it's late where you are.
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to hear about it too. I remember seeing Lake Geneva in the back of the Dragon magazine too, and thinking of it as this faraway place where wonderful things came from. So, but it never crossed my mind to ever go there one day. And then when you said, "Well, I guess where I'm going," it's like it's interesting.
Yeah. So, I actually. We actually have been talking to Luke. We just did the Tomb of Geisengax promotion for GUI Cube and GaxWorks. Anyone who has been watching us for a while knows we interviewed Alphinius Gu right before that. And then we also had an interview with both Alphinius and Luke at Genghis Khan. What you don't know is that we filmed a separate interview with Luke that same day. And I've been holding on to this footage for a little while because I knew after I knew I was going to GaryCon that it would probably come in handy. So instead of me telling you about what GaryCon is about, let's let Luke tell you and go to this clip.
I've got Luke Gygax here. We're here on the last day of Genghis Khan, 46,
yeah.
Yes. Stephen Starkey, one of my lead tabletop editors, senior tabletop editors, and I, got to play a game with, Luke here, at this convention. And I thought it'd be cool to kind of talk about the world that you created that we got to play in this
Absolutely.
Week, and also about what you're doing with GaryCon. So,
yeah.
Let's start with GaryCon.
Okay, yeah, GaryCon is coming up in just a month of time. So it's really near. We sold out this year, which is incredible. I can't believe it. Over 3,000 people in the little town of Lake Geneva. For those of you who don't know, only about 7,000 people in Lake Geneva itself. So this is a major event at the Grand Geneva Resort, which was once upon a time called the Playboy Club, way, way back in time. Wow. And why do I mention that? It's because Gen Con 10 was held there at that establishment simply because it was the largest place in Lake Geneva, and Gen Con had grown into the thousands, you know, low thousands. But obviously that didn't go over very well, given the, you know, given the a lot of young players and things like that. Right. Parents were like, wait a second, this is not where we want Junior to be. And so they moved to Parkside University and stuff. So we have some heritage, something to call back to. But GaryCon is a memorial convention that I started.
Did you put bunnies on the shirt that year?
No, we didn't. No. Sorry. No, can't do that. That just wouldn't work out right. Very well. Yeah, that's been a bad move. It's a bad move. But no, GaryCon's a memorial convention that I started in 2009 after my father passed away on March 4th, 2008. And so many people reached out to me and my family by, you know, on forums and even phone calls. I was in recruiting command at the time, you know, in the Army. And senior people looked me up and called, and they just wanted to leave a message to say, my condolences, your father was important to me when I was growing up. But that message was from all walks of life and anywhere from, you know, video game designers to doctors and lawyers or construction workers, right? It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Everybody plays D&D. It's across all the spectrum of people. But to many, it has made a significant impact in helping them discover themselves, and maybe overcome some challenges that they've had. And that was a common theme I saw in these messages. I was like, wow, this is more than just a really fun game and a way to make great friends. It does a lot for people, and more than I had thought about it. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, it really impacted a lot of people's lives.
It did, in such a positive way. So I said, you know what? Some people decide to jump in their car and drive to Lake Geneva to pay their respects.
Wow.
And so I was like, uh-oh, what are we going to do? I said, okay. After the funeral, let's rent the American Legion Hall, which was the site of some early conventions, including early Gen Con, like Gen Con 2 was there, as well as some other spots, two or three, I can't remember perfectly. And we brought food to pass. There was drinks, you know, good cheer. We put up the D&D cartoon and the Futurama episode that he was on. I set up a podium, and people could come play games, share their favorite story about my dad, and celebrate his life. And that's what we did. And it was a great time. And
so you decided to just keep on doing it.
Well, yeah. It was actually Harold Johnson, old TSR employee, said, Luke, this was really fun. You should do it again next year. And Jolly Blackburn was talking to me from Knights of the Dinner Table. And he said, yeah, you can call it GaryCon. I was like, okay, yeah, that's a cool name. And, of course, in the Knights of the Dinner Table, they have GaryCon for, in their world, my dad is mixed with Steve Jackson. And they call him Gary Jackson. So they have Gary Con.
That's hilarious.
Which is their Gen Con, right?
That is hilarious.
So I didn't know that at the time. But theirs is Gary Con, one word. Mine is Gary Con, two words. So that's the difference. And mine's actually real.
Yeah,
so,
yes.
But it was an homage to my father. It was a way to remember him and to keep you know, celebrating his life. And it's grown to encompass, for many years, of course, time. Everyone's getting older and their health, you know, some of the older guys and girls' health
is. We've lost a few.
We have. We really have. But I, you know, we have a memorial to my, you know, to my dad, to Dave Arneson, to so many of the others that are no longer with us, from Professor Barker, whoever it may be, you know, Gene Wells, unfortunately, as well as all the folks who are still there, still alive, who can come. They're invited. You know, we have, like I said, Tim Kask and, you know, Jim Ward and Mike Carr and Tom Wam, some of the earliest folks. You know, Dave McGarry, who invented Dungeon and who gamed with Dave Arneson, came down for many years. Health reasons kind of precluded the last few years of him coming down.
Right.
The guys who worked on Tractics with my dad, an old miniatures game.
Oh, wow.
Mike Reese comes down with his son. Dave Wesley, who did Bronstein, which was like the spark that started Arneson thinking about, you know, the fantasy game that he then showed to my dad, who put it all to rules and came, you know. So from the very, you know, those guys, all the way to, you know, Mike Merle's been coming for a number of years. You know, you know, the Jason Bowman has been, you know, all sorts of folks, Rob Schwab, you know, all the modern designers, you know, Lisa Teague comes there as well. So a lot of great names, and Ed Greenwood has been there the last couple of years, a great guy. So it encompasses from the roots to the very newest things, and we welcome all sorts of games. We even have a Magic tournament. My little brother loves Magic, so he has his cube, and my good friend Peter Adkison lost his father not too long ago, and his father's name was Gary Adkison, and he was also an Army officer and a really great guy who I enjoyed talking to very much. And so I asked Peter, I said, would it be okay if we did the Gary Adkison Memorial Magic Tournament, or Magic the Gathering Tournament? So it's a very long acronym, which we all love. And he said, yes. So he's going to be there doing the, you know, we have some special cards made up and things like that. So there'll be a memorial tournament for Gary Adkison as well. So
that's lovely.
It encompasses the industry.
Well, and of course, this year is the 50th anniversary. What? So, yes.
It is. Oh, I didn't know that. Yes.
I can't imagine you would have heard about that.
No, yes. Yes, of course. It's the 50th anniversary. Lake Geneva is the birthplace of Dungeons & Dragons. My dad wrote it in our home where I was born, 330 Center Street. And you can, well, you probably can't now because it's all sold out. But we run D&D and Chainmail in the basement at 330 Center Street. And throughout the year, I'll give a shout out to Yolanda Frontney and the birthplace of Dungeons & Dragons. You can rent that place and you can go play D&D with your group if you'd like at 330 Center Street.
I didn't know that.
And she's been kind enough to keep it the way it was, you know, without tearing it down or remodeling. And so it's still the weird little 70s you know, place where I grew up.
Shag carpet.
I think they pulled that out. Yeah. That didn't last.
That doesn't last.
But yeah, we did have an avocado. We had a dining table that my mom painted avocado because, you know, it was scuffed up or whatever. So horrible green color. Yeah. So it was great. But yeah, so GaryCon is just fantastic. It's GaryCon 16 already. So I can't believe that my dad's been
now,
gone.
Aren't
that
you
long
doing
now.
Something a week before?
I am. Yes. Yeah. So.
Obviously, that's probably sold out as well.
Go to Founders and Legends. So the weekend before, if you want to come to Lake Geneva, you can come to Founders and Legends. It's a bit smaller. It's about 400 people. Mm. We still have like 25, 28 guests or something like that. So it's ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's probably 20 people to every guest or 15 people to every guest. Ed Greenwood's going to be there. Todd Stashwick. I mean, just Mike Morales, you know, Zeb Cook, Keith Baker, Elisa Teague. I mean, there's a lot of my friends are there, and they're there to hang out and salute the 50th anniversary. It's a one-time deal. I can't do this every year because, believe it or not, that's not a money-making operation there, having that many people in such a small convention. But it harkens back to the early GaryCons where there was just a few hundred people, tons of guests, and we all just hung out and played games, and you rub elbows with people, and that really, that's what it's about. For me, I figured GaryCon will sell out. I said, there's going to be more people who want to come. Or what if you have PAX East on that weekend, which I think they do, right? And you can't make it. Why don't you come to this one? It's a smaller one. We're focused more on the roots. But you can play any game you want. I don't care. I play 4th edition. I don't care. You play what it. D&D is about having fun. There's no right or wrong way to play D&D. Come and play. Have fun. Make new friends. See old friends. And celebrate this thing that we've been doing, me, all my life and many, many decades. Oh, and honestly, meeting new people, the young players at GaryCon, it's awesome. Like the high school and college players who just discovered it and they're so excited. Like, I want to tell you about this and my character. This is great. No, it's amazing because then you're like, yeah, I see that spark. That's the future. Yeah. It's going to continue.
Yeah. It's one of those things that just started, you know, without really planning on it becoming such a big thing. And then this year was the 16th year of GaryCon, which also fell on the 50th anniversary of D&D. This year is the 50th anniversary of D&D. And actually D&D, the whole reason why I went is because D&D invited a group of journalists up there to cover some announcements. Now, most of those announcements have already been, like that was a few weeks ago, right? But we did get a chance to chat with like Chris Perkins and a few of the other designers that are working on this year's slate of D&D products that are coming out. I think the most interesting thing was probably the most information that we've gotten about the two books that are hitting before the end of the year, which is the new Player's Handbook and the new Dungeon Master's Guide. And basically they were just talking about how, you know, this isn't 5.5. This isn't, version 6 of the game. This is still 5e. They're just going to continue iterating on it, incrementally and kind of improving upon it over time, which I think is a smart play, because like 5th edition, there's nothing super obviously broken about 5th edition that couldn't easily be fixed. Like it doesn't feel like a whole new edition needs to happen, right? I don't know. How do you feel about that, Steven?
Well, actually, I was dreading the announcement of a 6th edition. Just looking at my shelves, I mean, if you look at the people that are trapped in the wargaming hobbies that have to deal with, I think Warhammer 40K is on its 13th edition now or something like that. Yeah. It's a lot. And dealing with the cycle of army books that comes out. So depending on what your tabletop flavor is that you're dealing in, you're going to have to deal with new books coming out and updates and so forth. But with Dungeons & Dragons, the cycle from 3.5 to 4 to 5 seemed fast. It may or may not have been, but it felt fast. And I think for a lot of people, even though these editions have been around for a number of years, I mean, like 5's been around for a while now, it still feels like it's pretty fresh, even because of that. It's a good rule set. And I think that the constant flow of innovative and pretty cool products that they've been coming out with and the way that they're feeding them to player base has been pretty evenly paced. And so to think that, well, sheesh, now I'm going to have to, I mean, you don't have to. Nobody has come in and stolen any of my books. They didn't come and repossess 3.5 and go, no, now you're up to 4. So, but still, as the player base moves on to the next one, you can continue to play the old editions, but having that the most recent edition gives you the access to the most recent products that come out. And whenever a really cool module hits the table or hits the marketplace and then your table, having the most recent edition is probably going to be where a lot of people want to be. And so not having to abandon 5 and move on to a new version, because even that's what happened with 3 to 3.5. I mean, it was a half increment, but it was enough of one that you ended up buying the 3.5 edition of all the books. So, I mean, you may as well have called it 4. So, yeah, I'm excited to see it not just drop everything behind.
Yeah, and I think for me, like, you know, as a relatively new player to D&D or to tabletop RPG, in general, it's nice to see what 5e has accomplished. You know, I keep diving deeper and seeing, you know, how much it's spread across, just into different IPs and how people have brought it in. I mean, I've got a copy of Lord of the Rings that has been adapted to the 5e, from its original, you know, source material. And it's been nice to be able to kind of take an idea or a setting that is popular, and to get some of those new players in. And that's really how I kind of got started with some of those, the tabletop, you know, the tabletop genre, even in general, was learning some of those 5e, doing a little one shot through one of our local game stores during COVID. And then I've been able to kind of matriculate into different ideas and different, even different systems. So it, you know, that general ease has been really nice, and it's been nice to see it so ubiquitous throughout culture these days, you know, seeing the starter set and Target, seeing, you know, things like Stranger Things bringing it in. And so I think that 5e has really been the catalyst for a lot of this. And you've got more players now probably, in the last 4 or 5 years than you ever have before. And it's becoming a lot more mainstream, which has been really nice. And so if you start changing things now, it could turn off that growth that you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, you'd have to really be in the weeds on the current edition to really kind of pick out, all right, well, this is broken or this could be better. But you know what? Like, I feel like the underlying structure is still incredibly solid, with 5e, and it would almost be consumer hostile to change it at this point or change it too much. So right. They are. And in fact, one of the things that really piqued my interest, there was a presentation on the new Player's Handbook, and they were talking about how they could make the way the information is that's in the books organized better, like in a way that makes more sense. And to that extent, they actually hired an external user experience studio. I can't remember the name of them off the top of my head. I do know one of the co-founders, his name is Jason Schreier, I believe. He actually was one of my panelists at a South by Southwest panel that I hosted for three years running, which was Press Start to Begin, which was about UX and video games. So I'm trying to reach out to him, because I'd like to get him on Tabletop Throwdown to talk to us about what they, like some of the UX stuff that they, concepts that they brought into helping them lay out the book better in a more user-friendly fashion. But that was cool. That was cool. But like, I mean, that was day one. We basically spent an entire day listening to them talk about like the new Vecna adventure, the new books, the Infinite Staircase adventure, which is basically updating for 5e a bunch of classic modules from back in the day, including what was the one that had the it was sci-fi but disguised as D&D, like where you find like
Expedition to the Barrier Peaks.
Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, yeah, they do an update of that one. They do an update of Pharaoh, which was one that I really liked. It was part of the Desert of Desolation series. Just a lot of classic stuff, and you know, to help celebrate 50 years of D&D. So they had a lot of cool stuff, and in fact, we got to like literally. I stepped off the plane, like four of us got into a car, drove the hour up to Lake Geneva, immediately jumped into a press only game of, I think it's like a tournament play kind of distillation of the new updated version of, I think it's the Tombs of Ixalan. No, God, it's the Cape. You know, I really should do my preparation
cavern,
better than
the lost caverns cavern,
Sawcant. Yes, whatever that word is. Yes. So it was based off of that. So, like literally walked into the Grand Geneva spa and like was where we like every nook and cranny of this place, people are playing TTRPGs, primarily D&D, like Castles and Crusades, Savage Worlds. Like, it was everywhere. It was everywhere. In fact, it reminded me a lot of how AggieCon used to get, Stephen, when we'd go into the MSC, right? The main... Yeah,
the Memorials too.
And then all of the little nooks and crannies where you had, like, any place that had a table and chairs or sitting was filled with people playing games. That's what it was like. It was super cool. That was a nice start. And then we did the day of presentations, but really, I think the thing that just blew me away the most about it is that it, after I got out of the day of presentations and into like the convention proper, I mean, first of all, the Grand Geneva hotel and spa wasn't always that. It was originally the Playboy Club, right? Hugh Hefner built it in the height of the Playboy mania, and even had a private airstrip built out there, so that he could get up there quickly from Chicago. In fact, they held Gen Con 6, I believe, or 7 in this location. They held like one or two Gen Con, the early Gen Cons, when it was still a Playboy Club, which did not go over well with some parents, from what I understand. But it was kind of cool knowing that, oh, you know, this place, which is like this crazy sprawling complex, in Frank Lloyd Wright inspired architecture. Like you go from like the main hall down to where the dealer's room was, and it's like you're going through a maze. It was honestly like one of the old D&D maps from one of the old modules, practically, just getting from one place to another in this place.
Did you check for secret doors?
Yeah, right. I didn't have a thief with me. you can't help but wonder if, like, you know, reality is inspiring the game, and then it's just flip-flopping back and forth, right? You got to wonder if that place actually inspired some of those maps from some of those early modules. but it really, the whole thing just felt more like a tribal gathering than an actual convention, right? Because I mean, first of all, it's admittedly like a solid majority of the people in attendance were people like my age or a little older, right? So it's people who've been playing D&D since they were kids back in the 70s and 80s. But there were a lot of younger people there. There were a lot of the people who actually worked on early D&D, like Ed Greenwood and Errol Otis. I got my copy of Deities and Demigods signed by Errol Otis, the cover artist. Jeff Easley was there. Ed Greenwood. I met Ed Greenwood there, like in person, finally. And it was just crazy. And then, like, you have those people that are like celebrities in D&D, right? Like, anybody who's been playing this game for a long time knows who these people are. And then you have sitting at the next to you at the bar, you have Joe Manganiello and Vince Vaughn and like one of the showrunners for Game of Thrones hanging out, and Tom Morello, because they're all in a D&D game group together in LA, right? And this is the con they go to go have some fun. It is crazy. It was nuts. It was so much fun. It was a ridiculous amount of fun.
How many people, how many attendees are there?
I think it was about 3,000, maybe 3,500. So okay. Still pretty small. But it like, and I think they could still kind of take over more. But just to give you an idea, the population of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and I believe Luke mentioned this in the interview that we just watched, I think is only around 7,000. So, but you got to remember, this is also a town that is accustomed to having, you know, like 7,000. Those are the townies. Like,
right.
This is a town that has been a destination for, like, you know, the affluent people from Chicago since the turn of the century or earlier. I'm not talking like, you know, 1800s to 1900s, not the most recent turn of the century. We'll get into the tour a bit, but I don't have a picture of this, but like we were shown like there were locations where like Duke Ellington played, and I mean, this is not an easy place to get to, right? This is not like a rustling, bustling, place. It's just a little town in a nice part of Wisconsin that happens to be really nice in the summer. And so all these different resorts and spas sprung up to accommodate it. So it's very, very interesting dynamic to the place. Let me show you some pictures real quick. All right. So this was the main bar area. This was like the main, the entrance to the whole place is off to the right center, right? So this is the main kind of bar area. We're looking out towards the entrance, and I believe this was during the charity auction. But you can see it's like got this weird like architecture kind of lodge looking situation. This was where everybody gathered at the end of the day. To drink and mingle and have fun. And it was super cool. And like, like those two balconies, I have no idea how to get there. right. It's the place is kind of like a maze.
It looks kind of like the foyer from a 1960s, 1950s ski lodge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah. Not The Shining or anything.
Yeah. So, why don't I just dive into, so we got there that night, played a game, which was great. It was a great way to start the con. The next day did a ton of, presentations about upcoming products and the 50th anniversary celebration. And then the next few days, we were largely left to ourselves, but there was one thing we got to do on Friday. And that was, Michael Whitwer, who has written a number of books. He wrote a book, about the history of D&D, I was going to bring it down here to hold it up, and I totally forgot. Basically, he's become sort of a let's see, that's funny. I typed in Michael Whitwer, and it found his brother, Sam Whitwer. Sam Whitwer. That's a name that some people who have followed Gaming Trend for a while might know. Sam Whitwer was the Starkiller in the Force Unleashed games. And he's also, he also does the voice of Darth Maul in the animated mm-hmm. stuff now. That's his brother. Sam introduced Michael to D&D back when they were kids, and they both got hooked. He wrote Empire of Imagination, which is an interesting history of D&D and Gary and everybody who worked on it. He also wrote Art and Arcana and Lore and Legends, and also has co-written the Two Heroes Feast cookbooks, interestingly enough. So I believe they grew up in Chicago, and he used to go up to Lake Geneva all the time, and he guided this amazing tour of all of the, or at least most of the really relevant historical places that relate to the creation of D&D and the early years of D&D. And I thought I'd actually share that with you guys a little bit, because I did take some pictures. I posted all this on Twitter,
I think you mean X?
No, whatever. Twixer. But like this is I open this up again. Thumbnails. Yes. So this is the, he even made a map.
Oh, nice.
Of the locations that he was going to take us to in this, in the old blue line style, the mimeographs blue line style of the old maps in the original D&D modules, which I thought was awesome. Yeah. I still have a copy of this. I'm going to frame this. It's really cool. But
did
yeah,
it smell
all
like
things,
a mimeograph?
It did not. It was actually a very, very lovely color print, which was almost disappointing, but not quite. But yeah, let's dive right in. So this was Gary Gygax's childhood home. Now Mike Whitwer, who actually has agreed to appear on Tabletop Throwdown sometime in the future. I just need to tell him when. He's going to come on the show sometime. That'll be super fun. He would do a much better job of describing this tour than I would, because he did a fantastic job the day of. As a matter of fact, every one of us were like, you know, you should do this every year. You could probably, sell out every year. And so you might actually do it, as like a charity thing, for a place, a location that I will show you after this one. Anyway, this is Gary's childhood home. And apparently he swore up and down he was convinced it was haunted. This is actually, this is ground zero for the creation of D&D. This was the house that he lived in, the only other occupation that he had while he lived in this house briefly was, I believe he repaired shoes. And that didn't work out too well. but this is the original house, and I can show you 330 Center Street. That's Mike Whitwer there in the second photo. These were both iPhone photos, obviously. This is where it started. Mike actually, the current owners are turning it into kind of a museum. And he got permission for us to come inside. So this is the entry hall. These are these women are the owners. I believe the night before, the night after, they had hosted a D&D game in the house, that some people came and played, which is super cool. But this, that's cool. I was a little disappointed. I wanted to get a t-shirt and they didn't have any in my size. Maybe next year. But this was definitely one of the coolest things that I saw. This is the actual desk and the actual typewriter that Gary typed, his part of the very first edition of D&D at.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then, I don't think it's the same table, but it is the same dining room, where he was playtesting D&D and they were playing D&D, for the entire time that they lived there. It's just kind of, I've been to historical locations before. Like, you go to Europe, you go to castles, you see all the places. Maybe you go to I went to a lot of stuff in Berlin when I lived in Berlin, right? Like, crazy stuff, from, World War II and long before. And it's cool to look at, but I didn't really have a personal connection. This I had a personal connection to, just connecting that the game that I played since I was a kid was hashed out in this room or on that typewriter, on that desk, was really, I don't know how to describe that feeling. But and then like this was this the stairs. We didn't go upstairs, but these I loved this these stairs because this is from when they lived there. And this was just this was just something that apparently Gary had painted on the stairs, I believe. Take the high road, which I thought was super cool. But even cooler than that was going into the basement, right? So upstairs in the dining room, and this is a small house. I think it's like maybe 1,200 square feet, like in total, maybe 1,500. Like this place was tiny. And these ceilings were very low. I kind of conked my head a few times on it. But this was where, Gary and his friends would do wargaming. Cause wargaming of course is what D&D was kind of born out of. And this isn't like an original table that he gamed at, but, it's based more or less the same. And I didn't realize that a lot of old, early wargaming involved like basically a giant sandbox on a table. Right. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So just an aside, in the military, when they do the wargaming for a plan, it's done on a sand table. That's what it's still called.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense because a lot of early wargaming was probably not less, more war and less game, right?
Right.
anyway, so yeah, that was the birthplace of D&D. Super cool place. This place, however, the Horticultural Hall, which is about two blocks away, was the site of the original Gen Cons. So, Gen Con, was originally in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which is where it got the gin part of the name, right? And it was originally a wargaming convention that, I don't think it was started by Gary, but it was taken over by Gary and a lot of the people that were in his orbit pretty early on. So the first six Gen Cons were held in Horticultural Hall in Lake Geneva, and this was the interior. This is how big it was. Now, Dan, you haven't been to Gen Con, but Stephen, you have. Now, admittedly, I don't think either of us, we've only gone since it's been in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
But this was like, I remember, you know, there would be ads in Dragon Magazine for Gen Con, come out to Gen Con. It was probably still held in this hall the first time I saw one of those ads, which was in, I believe Dragon Magazine number 49, which came out in like 1981. I could be wrong, but I think it was here. I could probably look that up. But like those other people in the picture, like they're preparing for a wedding. Like this is still a venue that hosts events today. Super cool place. I know what it was. TSR. What does TSR stand for again, Stephen?
Tactical Simulations Rules, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. So TSR was the company that was formed that originally that made D&D, the original D&D, apparently TSR was effectively formed here at Gen Con number 6.
Huh.
Yes.
You know, you couldn't fit the whole staff in there now.
No. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so this house, this was Don Kay's house. Don Kay was a friend of Gary's. And basically, when they did the first print run of 1,000 brown box editions of D&D, it's a brown box with like three little booklets in it. this was where, so Don Kay basically, I think he took out a loan on his house to help Gary print it and got an ownership stake in the company. And so because his name was, because he was the money guy, the boxes, the cases of brown box editions were brought, were delivered to this house. So this was the first distribution site for D&D ever. And again, all of this is like within a block or two of everything else, just about. This was the first home of TSR. And the Dungeon Hobby Shop, which was the first gaming hobby shop ever to exist. So like, you know, downstairs they had a very small hobby shop, and then upstairs were the offices for TSR. The loft up here at the top, that was where Dave Trampier and Dave Sutherland did most of the original D&D art in the books. Very cool place.
What is it?
This
now?
Isn't the great. It is still. This is. It is. It, they're turning it into like a TSR museum. And it is the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum. Actually, it's less of a TSR museum and more of a, this is the first hobby shop, and this is also the first home of TSR. As you can see, the a neon TSR logo is in the window there.
Yeah.
So, this isn't the greatest picture because we were just driving by, but this building, is the second home of TSR and the Dungeon Hobby Shop. Slightly bigger digs. It's a historical building. And there is a confectionery in like the first floor of where TSR used to be in this place. This was the last home of TSR. It was more like a kind of an industrial building. Kind of off to the side. They moved into this in 1982. They even built like a second section onto it in 1992. This was where most of the growth of D&D, that first growth in the 80s of D&D happened. This was on the section that they added onto that building. Apparently, there is a time capsule buried underneath this plaque. That's super cool. Then that's where we left off. I don't want to get diverge too much into the history of D&D or anything like that, because that could be like a whole series of podcast episodes, to be honest. And I'd want to get Mike Whitwer to really... chime in on that, because he knows what he's talking about. It was really just kind of amazing seeing all of this. It just thinking about where I was at that time, you know, I was just a kid reading these books, occasionally playing. Steven got really loud.
Is it loud?
Okay, now it's dying down. We're good.
I cut the microphone off a second because of the dogs.
Yeah, I figured. This was like... if I want to dip a little into hyperbole a bit, it was... probably one of the closest things I've had to a religious experience, you know. like it really kind of it grounded a lot of like these lofty childhood ideas I had of what D&D was and who was making it.
Well, I could see that. I mean, I don't tend to like fanboy or geek out about very much stuff. Like even whenever I meet really very famous people, it's kind of like, oh, that's cool. It's a famous person. But I think that my childhood is so entangled with Dungeons and Dragons that when I do meet a luminary from the Dungeons and Dragons geekosphere, whatever you want to call it, like then that does trigger my, this is something special to me because it helped define my childhood, like in my teenage years. And well, now, like the whole life. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, it's, even though I'm kind of coming into it late in the game, I'm watching, you know, I work in schools and I get to see new, you know, kiddos who are finding their place and finding community through the playing of these tabletop, you know, these tabletop games. And one of the things that we try to teach our kiddos is, you know, anything can be abused, anything can become unhealthy, but if it's your thing and it's healthy and it's helping you and you're connecting and you're finding some joy in it, then that's your thing, man. I just want people to find those things. And it's really cool to see, you know, the next generation kind of getting into this and it's being more accepting. I just love that element of it. And seeing these kids, just, you know, kids that don't talk to each other or talk to other kids in the classroom, but they find this commonality and they can sit there and they can have fun and they can connect. That brings the joy in my heart. And, you know, for me finding finding this so late in life, it's still fun. And I keep thinking about it. It may not be D&D, but it may be another role-playing system, but you know, it all kind of stems from where D&D started and really was the basis. And no matter where it goes, there's always that history of, and the influence. You can't deny that going forward.
Yeah. I'm more like you, Steven. I don't generally get very starstruck. I'm usually like, oh, hey, it's that person. And I generally tend to think, you know, I bet the last thing they want is for me to go up to them and like be all fanboy over them, right? Like they probably just want to like either be left alone or like have people recognize that they're other people too, right? Like they're not just like this elevated presence. I think that's why my reaction was so strong, right? Because suddenly I was hanging out with and chatting with and playing games with these people that made something that enriched my life, like greatly since I was a child. Like at the auction, I bought a set of, I won a bid for a set of Dragon magazines, including the very first Dragon magazine I ever got that I lost years ago. And I was flipping through it and looking at it with fresh eyes, right? And there was an article, there was a column by Ed Greenwood. And I'm like, I just hung out with Ed Greenwood and he told me that I should stick brown bananas in my beard to make my beard grow better. You know? I was like, I don't think my wife's going to appreciate that. But it was weird, right? Cause I'm like, oh, I'm suddenly reading the column in Ed's voice in my head. Cause I've heard him talk and it's like, it just blew my mind. And all of these people are just like, you know, it's not like making D&D really turned them into celebrities or even made them like enough money to like take care of themselves into their old age. Poor James Ward just passed away like days before GaryCon started. You know, some of these guys are getting old and they aren't as healthy as they once were. And it was, it was really, really cool. That's why I was like, this was more of like a tribal gathering, right? It was more, it felt more than just a convention. I want to go back again and again until, because it's just, it's so, so, so profoundly, it's like small. It's like, I guess the closest thing I could compare it to is, and I'm more of like a live music guy. Like if you saw like your favorite band that plays nothing but stadiums now, and like somehow you managed to walk into like a small club with like, you know, that can only put only 500 people can get in there, and they like get up on stage and they play a set, and you're just like, what? Right. that's kind of what it felt like. It felt very special. It felt very precious. And I think this con is going to get bigger, which I think is great for Luke, but it's going to lose something along the way. And I just want to make sure that I go enough times to like experience that something just a few more times. And I really want you to try it, Stephen, because you're going to love it. You're absolutely going to love it. I highly recommend it. Gary Kahn, like, I remember before I went to Gen Con and like knowing what Gen Con had built up in my head as, because of all those years of playing D&D and seeing mentions of Gen Con in magazines and everything. And then finally going and just like, oh my God, this is an amazing, amazing convention. Amazing. This felt more real, felt more amazing than even that. And, you know, not a dig on Gen Con, because Gen Con is a great convention and I love going every year, and I'm busy as hell every year because it's so big and there's so much cool stuff. But this was pretty fantastic.
When I think, Mike, you kind of said it and you've alluded to it, and it really feels like it was a grassroots. It was organic. It wasn't something where people were going out and selling something. It was a bunch of people who got together because they loved a game and they wanted to come together with fresh friends. And I would say that there's lots of little local conventions out there for all those little things. And, you know, we've got some in Colorado here where we are, and there's just little ones that I hear about. And I see those little organic ones, and those are the ones that tend to be the best. It's people coming together and enjoying a hobby and just having some fun and, you know, nerding out together and geeking out together with the things. And I think that's what it's all about at the end of the day is just getting together and having some fun with some people who enjoy the same thing that you do. And if it grows, then that's great because it grew organically. So,
well, hey, we've got a little bit more of the interview that we had with Luke where he's talking a little bit about Gaxworks and like D&D in general. I want to share that with everybody. We'll play that real quick.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Gaxworks. Yeah. This is your own thing.
It is. Yeah, so Gaxworks, I started it as a publishing arm in 2018. And so I just I did some streaming events, and I published a few of the modules that I wrote, the tournament modules I wrote for GaryCon. Mm-hmm. I started doing that because my dad wanted his children to follow in his footsteps.
Right.
And I thought, okay, you know what, I'm in the military. I don't have time to, you know, I haven't gone to that field. But I think it would be really cool to write just a little tournament module every year for GaryCon. And so I did. And, of course, you know, I was like, oh, what am I going to write about the first year? So instead of starting small, I started big. Yes. I thought about, well, there's this world called the World of Oakrim, and there was some sort of, you know, magical calamity, a magical nuclear war that happened and devastated the land, and the civilization fell. But there's all these wonders buried in the blighted lands that are out there. And this is before 5th edition, so it had come out, right? So, for me, reestablishing a sense of wonderment was important. Because I've been playing for 30, 35 years.
Right.
And I say, okay, there's a 7-foot-tall green creature with black bushy hair and long arms, and it looks kind of emaciated, but in kind of rubbery skin. And you're going, oh, it's a troll. I'm going to use fire because it regenerates, but it can't regenerate fire damage. And blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know it's going to get 3 attacks. And there's no sense of wonderment or mystery there, right?
Right.
But if you have chaos magic flowing and basically mutating creatures, and get, you can reskin things, you can add powers, you can mix it up, mm-hmm. and you've got a great rationale to do so. And I like the idea of sort of taking Gamma World and D&D and kind of mixing them together a little bit. So you get a little bit of science. You know, if technology is sufficiently advanced enough that you don't understand it at all, mm-hmm. it may as well be magic, right?
Right.
So that was kind of what I was thinking.
Exactly.
So this old civilization essentially could do things that we would do today or possibly in the future. What we do with technology they did with magic.
But well, and also when we played with you the other day, like, my brain kind of went back. There was this a series of modules that were like Egyptian, sort of Egyptian themed.
Okay.
Came out in the mid 80s.
Was that the El Kadim stuff? Or
I believe so. Yeah. Like, it really kind of, like, their childhood memories were triggered, right?
Yeah. And that's great because again, it was before fifth edition. I was trying to look for something different. So, and I'd just gotten back from a tour in Iraq. So I was like, okay.
That explains it. Yeah.
So let's put it in a desert scenario. Let's have the environment play a factor, because guess what? Running around in 50 pounds of armor in that kind of heat, you're not going to be walking 20 miles and doing, you know, sprinting and jumping and do all this. It's not fun, people. I'm telling you, it's hot. 129 degrees is hot. It's so hot. It's not fun. It's like you're sitting in an oven. So I just wanted to bring that pain and misery that I had suffered and put it in the gaming table and just present different challenges. Mm-hmm. A different type of culture, a crossroads, a Bosphorus, the Maghreb, would just offer people different narratives and descriptions. So I thought that would be interesting and engaging to people. My wife is from Morocco, and so Oak Rim is basically Morocco backwards. So
nice.
So and so that was a lot of the inspiration. So I'd get out, you know, myths, you know. Arabic myths and Moroccan myths, and I'd ask her, hey, what's this in Moroccan Arabic? And then I'd kind of adjust it. And so there's lots of words that are shout-outs to Arabic, Moroccan Arabic, and things
That's
culturally.
Super cool.
She'd give me a little advice to make sure that I'm, you know, kind of staying in line and, you know, not saying something offensive or dumb or, you know,
right.
Because that's important too. It's great. So the city of Shintufi is the last standing vestige of this ancient civilization that happens to be my mother-in-law's maiden name is Shintufi.
So it's a
shout out to her.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Zara Shintufi, unfortunately, she passed away last year. Mm. She's no longer with us, but was a very welcoming woman, and I liked her quite a lot. So I thought that was a nice homage to her. And then I've named the seven gods of Oak Rim, you know, the goddess of light and the sun and justice and knowledge is Bushira. My wife's name's Bushra. So and then there's Amara. I have Amira as a daughter, you know, Mirali instead of Miriam, you know, is one of the gods. And then Sabrina is called, we nickname her Bean. We call her the Bean. Mm-hmm. So Dabeen, the god of chaos, and so she has a little bit of a temper. So that's Dabeen. Of course, I throw out those things just like my dad did with Greyhawk and these sorts of things. So carrying on a little bit of a family tradition. And since I retired, I was able to put a little bit more time into developing Oak Rim because, oh my gosh, it is a lot of work to do world building. World building for yourself to play in. You can keep it all up here. It's great. No problem, man. Now I have to explain it to other people, and then they ask questions like, well, I hadn't thought about that.
Yes.
So it's much more difficult. So I have enlisted the help of a couple people. Matt Everhart has been helping me co-write some things. We've set up a Patreon. People are contributing some works, and oftentimes we'll discuss with them, and I'll give them frameworks to work in. We have a little, you know, little internal primer that we're developing so we can share some of that info with them. And I met a gentleman named Rob Howell, who's a great great guy. He's an author. I met him at 20 Books as an independent author. And he played a cleric of Bushira in Eye of Shintufi and Heart of Shintufi. Played Hedbiz Thorn.
So
he's like, huh, okay. He's like, well, what about these things? And I said, well, here's like the paragraph or whatever. And I kind of gave him, you know, a couple more sentences when he asked questions. And he's like, okay. And then he came up to me afterwards. He's like, I really love this sort of stuff. I love researching, you know, religious, you know, histories from medieval period. He's like, I'd love to write
your pantheon.
Yeah, like, I'll give you a sample. Write this one up. I was like, okay, sure, why not, Rob? And he did, and I was like, wow, this is great. I wouldn't have thought all this cool stuff.
Right?
And so he's helped me flesh out the whole pantheon. All the guys. So I gave him my, you know, few pages of notes or whatever, and we talked about things. And I was like, great. And, you know, he here's where this order is, and here's this and that. And I'm like, fantastic. Now I'm populating these places that I just had a few sentences on and knowledge up here. People ask, I'm able to tell them, and then we're, you know, the world comes to life, right? Mm-hmm. Because trying to do it all yourself, you know, I'd either have to become a hermit and sit and write just this, well, or you have to bring in help.
To paraphrase something else, it takes a village to build a world, right?
It does, yeah. We should use that as a question.
Right, right.
It takes a village to build a world. Yeah. And I also found, and this may be something that's a consequence of all the role-playing that I did growing up, I work better in a team.
Yeah.
So and I think that's...
Collaboration is where it's at.
Right. The military teaches you to work in teams. You do a lot of team, group. You're convincing the group. You're coming up with ideas as a group to overcome challenges in D&D. Mm-hmm. I really like riffing off other people. You know, what about this? Okay, great. Yes. And then we'll expand upon it, come up with a framework, and boom, then we can go. I think you get... Well, it's a lot of fun,
awesome.
At least for me.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll definitely put a link to Gaxworks' website where you can buy some of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And Patreon.
Yeah, and the Patreon. We'll put that in the description of the video below. But I wanted to scoot off the beaten path here. But I wanted to ask you some questions about your time in the military.
Sure.
So I grew up a military brat. Mm-hmm. And... when I first got into D&D, I found the first book I got was Deities and Demigods, original edition, at the base bookstore, right?
Okay.
And then it was like a couple of years before I even played after that, because I just read it and memorized it and bought a couple of more books. But when I finally did play, it was at a base rec center with GIs. I basically went and bugged the hell out of them until they let me play, like this little kid, 8, 9, 10 years old. I'd offer to draw their characters, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so eventually they acquiesced. But then I realized that and living in a military town, I'm not in the military now, but living in a military town, I discovered that a lot of GIs play D&D.
Yeah, it's very popular.
Right? And I was wondering, in your time in the military, did you experience that? And did people just, lose their minds when they figured out who they were?
They did.
And who you were?
Yeah, they did. So I enlisted at 18. I would turn 19 in basic training and went to Germany. It's my first station. But you're right. People would see the name Gygax and they'd go, any relation to... And I'd be like, that's right. They'd be like, no way. That's so cool. And so it was a kind of two things. One, it used to bug me because as a youngster...
Yeah, you don't want to be your dad. Yeah. You don't want to be like your dad.
I'm myself. Yeah, yes. I'm doing this thing, right? So it was important to me to make my own way in the world, right?
Right.
But, of course, it also was a great way to make friends. And play games, right? Which I did. We played a lot of games. And why does it appeal to people in the military? Well, when you're out in the middle of nowhere and there's not a lot to do, what a great way to escape and, have fun, build stories, be goofy and laugh. And, of course, make better friendships with people, right? So it just seems like a great fit. And so I'm still friends with the guys who I gamed with way back when I was just 19 years old in Germany, and they still come to GaryCon, about four of them.
Fantastic.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, one of them runs a Firefly game that Margaret Weiss plays in every year. She loves it because she's a huge Firefly fan. So she's always I get to play this character. And so he comes and runs it every year for her. So, yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks for humoring me on that question.
Of course.
It's an interesting thing I've had in my brain for a while, ever since, I have friends who were in the military that ended up playing quite a bit as well. So, well, awesome. Well, thank you, Luke. Definitely check out Gaxworks. Check out GaryCon. I really wish I was going this year, unfortunately I'm going to a bunch of other conventions.
It happens. I understand. There's so many great conventions out there, and I would say there's some great large conventions. If you want to come to a convention that feels like a family reunion for your gamer family, come to GaryCon. It's close knit. It's welcoming. You may come there as a stranger. You will leave with a lot of friendships, and I think that's important. That my dad really believed in that community. I told the story, I can't remember, yesterday. people would come up to his door. You know, this is like 2000s, you know. And they'd knock on the door and be like, are you Gary Gygax? And he'd be like, yes, yes, I'm Gary Gygax. It was the 90s, 2000. And they'd be like, oh, my God, Mr. Gygax. And they'd, you know, go into their fanboy thing, yeah. Right? And he'd just say, okay, well, come on in on the porch. Sit down. You want a glass of iced tea or something? And he'd chat with him for a little bit. And if he had an opening in his game, you know, some, because people, you know, life people come in and out. Right. He's like, hey, you know, you're local, right? Well, I game every Thursday at this time. You want to join? So we picked up several gamers that way. And but that's just who he was. Right. You know, there's so many people have told me, you know, I was at Gen Con and I was working a booth and I'd go out and smoke a cigarette or whatever, get some fresh air, or just get a sip out, get some fresh air. And I'd be rapping with this hippie dude about, you know, about history or life or whatever it was, smoking cigarettes. And then, like, one of their friends like, oh, my God, Gary Gygax is signing over that booth. Let's get in line. And he'd grab his books and go over there and stand in line. He's like, wait a second. That's the hippie dude I was smoking cigarettes with. Because he was just a regular guy. You know? He's just not pretentious and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's just the atmosphere. And I try to, you know, that's what I understand gaming is to be, is mm-hmm. really we're welcoming. Believe it or not, a lot of us weren't always the most popular folks in the beginning. I know, it's shocking. Yeah. It's shocking.
Right.
So we're a welcoming community, you know, to come and hang out.
I mean, back in the day, we had to keep it secret.
You did. Yeah, because being a nerd wasn't cool at all.
Yeah, yeah.
One fun story they have is a guy who helps me still with Gary Conn, and I won't say who it is just in case he doesn't want this out there. Right. But he was his parents were getting divorced. He was going through all sorts of troubles. He was at Gen Con, and he was standing in line to have my dad sign something for him. Mm-hmm. And he was like 13 or 12, right? Mm-hmm. So he got up there, and my dad could see in his face something was wrong. And so he signed his book. He said, hey, why don't you just have a seat right there. I'm going to just, you know. And he would, like, between signings, chat with him a little bit. And so he's like, hey, okay, what's your address? I'm going to send you some stuff, you know. And he's like, okay. So he gave him his information. And my dad, sure enough, sent him like, you know, a little couple items or a couple of D&D items or whatever. And he wrote him back. And then my dad wrote him back. And so they would correspond so often. And that meant so much to him that he still remembers it today. And he still wants to give to the community just because my dad was able, as a parent, mm-hmm. was able to see something's wrong. Let me take a moment to try and help this kid out, right? And that's what you look out for people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, gamers are good people, generally down to earth and humble and welcoming. And I would love to keep promoting the positive aspects of mm-hmm. gaming, the great things it can do for you, the things that it teaches you. You don't even realize that you're learning skills, life skills, mm-hmm. while you're playing a game. I know. Don't tell your kids that when you show them the game. Just say, we're going to have fun, but you're going to help them out. They're going to have expanded vocabulary.
Yep.
You know, learn how to convince people, convey their ideas, all sorts of cool stuff.
Well, and also it teaches you empathy, right? Because sure. you're putting yourself in the role of another person.
Yeah.
So you're having to think about how that person would react to situations. And then, it's like that opens up synapses in your brain and you start doing that in real life.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's probably the thing that has always encouraged me over the years and been a thing that I've passed on to my kids as well. So.
Yeah, it's transferable. Those skills are transferable to your real life. And you don't even recognize it. And in the military, I always did well. I was, you know, was a whatever squad leader for the all through basic training, which was horrible because you had a little bit more responsibility. there was really no upside to that. But like in I was promoted first all the time. I got waivers for promotions. I was the leadership awardee out of my primary leadership development course, my local. You know, people always fast tracked me on stuff. And same thing in my officer schools when I had my lobotomy and went to the dark side. the military will get that. It wasn't because I'm some sort of superhero genetically or what. No, it's because I put in a lot of reps being, you know, party caller and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was used to speaking up, being in charge, accepting responsibility for stuff, you know. So I just think those skills transfer not only to the military, it's pretty obvious in the military, but to a job. Hey, you have to make a presentation. Okay, I've dungeon mastered. I can totally present to a small group. Mm-hmm. No problem. I got this, you know. So there's just a lot of great things that you can learn through role-playing. You know, and stuff my dad probably had no idea about when he made it. He was just thinking, whoa, this is going to be so much fun to play, you know. But it turned out to be so much more, which is why it's going strong at 50 years. And I think it'll go strong for many more decades.
Right.
I don't think I'll be able to see it to the 100th anniversary. I don't think I'll be here for that one, but I hope that it's still being played.
I mean, you know, we could all become cyborgs.
That's true, we could be, yeah.
You know.
That's right, I might just be like one of those heads in a jar in that future camera. Right, there you go.
Awesome, well, thanks again, Luke.
Of course, my pleasure.
Fantastic, and yeah, we'll be seeing you around. I'm sure we'll see you again.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right, well, that's all we got for this episode of Tabletop Throwdown. I hope you enjoyed it. Gary Kahn, I can't recommend it enough. Luke's doing amazing things with that. Thanks, Dan and Steven, for joining me on this little retrospective of my my visit. This is Mike and Dan and Steven signing off.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.